You're listening to The Sound Off. The Sound Off. With the Solomonster. Solomonster.
Oh, right into the cervical vertebrae area there. Oh, no, Monsoon, it's the bat. I'm sorry.
Use him! Use him! Waffle him with it! Remember that old saying? What the hell? Use the bat!
Chickens? Donkeys? I don't understand that at all.
Welcome to episode 152 of The Sound Off here on SCScoops.com. It is Sunday, March 27th, 2011. I am the Solomonster here with you as always. Thank you for downloading the podcast. And just want to get this out of the way first. I apologize if I sound a little bit different or a little under the weather because, in fact, I am sick again. It sucks. Don't get sick, people. So just wanted to get that out of the way first. I'm a little stuffy, so if I sound weird, that would be why. Also, before we get into the news of the week here, I want to just go back to something I mentioned last week. And I put the vote to all of you about 2 weeks ago. I mentioned that I had come across some old radio shows that a friend of mine had conducted years ago, almost a decade ago, in fact. And back in the day, he would have me on occasion to talk wrestling. I know, big surprise. And I came across two copies of the show from January of 2002, which was an interesting time in wrestling. Obviously, there was a lot going on, primarily in WWE. At that point, WCW was already dead. And I was able to edit a couple of different clips from the two shows, and I figured I'll splice them into the show this week for your listening pleasure. So I want to play the first clip for you right now. This clip is yours truly. I am the one who is on the telephone line, if you cannot distinguish my voice from the others. And in this particular clip, I am talking about my all-time favorite wrestling chant. And I say that sarcastically. I think you can probably figure out what I'm going for here. So let's go to the first clip as I discuss the Stone Cold Steve Austin What Chant. This is back from January 10th, 2002. Rewind.
Well, basically, I read the Austin interview first, and Austin talks about, you know, how the What catchphrase gotten a lot more popular than he ever thought it would, and a lot of wrestlers kind of, you know, don't like it, because they go out to cut a promo, and every 2 seconds when they say something, the crowd responds with What, and they, you know, they have trouble getting their point across, and then a couple minutes later, I click onto Lance Storm's website, and there he's got a commentary, and I said, uh-oh. So I kind of opened it up because you know these guys got to be careful. Jim Ross reads everything on the internet, so I read his commentary, and I mean I have to agree with everything he says. Yeah. I mean I think Brandon made a comment to me last night after he saw Austin's interview. He's like, that's so annoying.
It is really obnoxious.
It's obnoxious. It gets obnoxious after a while, but I mean I can see his point. I know I think Lance said something in his commentary about how on Raw Monday he went backstage and talked to Jericho, and Jericho admitted that, you know, they're both kind of screwed for the next 6 months as far as promos go.
There you go. Let the record state that I am, in fact, not the only one who hates that god-awful chant. Even Chris Jericho himself had no love for it back in the day. All right, so I'll splice a few more of those clips into the show here as we go along. Got to get to my Raw notes here. A lot of notes from Monday's show for what I thought was a pretty fairly average show, actually. Pretty paint-by-numbers build to WrestleMania. So it was almost like they were stalling until the big go-home show coming up this Monday night. There's nothing wrong with that. It just made for what I thought was a pretty boring show. I do want to say one thing here, though. In fairness, I do take issue after bashing TNA for their lack of wrestling last week. I take issue for all of the short, meaningless matches they had on the show this week. I know why they do it, and I know at this point the matches are not as important as the build itself to WrestleMania, but it just seemed like every match that we saw on Monday night was so short that it was almost the situation of asking yourself, why do it in the first place? Why bother? The matches don't mean anything anyway when they're that short, so why even bother sending people out there in the first place? So I just figured I should mention that to kind of balance things out. I know I took TNA to task for the same thing last week, so I could do the same thing for WWE as well. Triple H's promo. This fucking promo bored me to tears. Now, when I heard that Triple H and The Undertaker were going to pretty much have full control over their angle leading up to the pay-per-view, and that the writers would take a mostly hands-off approach. I thought it was a great thing. I mean, yeah, I figured if they were going to touch at some point, if these two guys were going to touch at some point before WrestleMania, then perhaps they would have one really heated, realistic pull-apart brawl at some point. Or if they weren't going to touch before the pay-per-view, perhaps have Shawn Michaels announced as the guest referee. I mean, that would add an element of intrigue to the match as far as whether or not he would be able to call it right down the middle. You know, would he be a fair and impartial referee? Would he lean a little more towards his best friend, you know, and still have all of this pent-up animosity towards The Undertaker, who beat and embarrassed him 2 years in a row and sent him into an early retirement? Or would he perhaps side with The Undertaker, you know, and not want anybody to beat the streak since he couldn't do it himself? You know, it would have added a little bit of intrigue. Obviously, at this point, they haven't made any mention of Shawn Michaels being involved in this match at all. And in fact, the idea of making it a streak versus career match is completely off the table. It was thought about. They decided against it. I don't have a problem with that, just because I don't know that anybody would have honestly believed that Triple H would be wrestling his last match in less than 2 weeks. But I think they could have easily put Shawn in there as the guest referee. I know they have Austin as the referee for the Cole Lawler match. It would have been guest referee overkill. But of the two, it would have made more sense to have Shawn wearing the striped shirt at WrestleMania instead of Steve Austin, who just feels like, you know, he's there for the sake of being there so they could promote Tough Enough. So you don't have streak versus career. You don't have Shawn Michaels. The only thing this match has going for it is a no-holds-barred stipulation. So that at least opens things up a little bit as far as what these guys can do. Now, the more I thought about this match this week, the more I think, maybe I'm completely wrong, but the more I think about this match, the more I envision Shawn Michaels having some sort of involvement. And by that I mean super kicking somebody. Presumably The Undertaker, which could lead to a really dramatic near fall. I mean, if you think about it, you know, Shawn will be there, obviously. He's going into the Hall of Fame the night before. He will be at WrestleMania. He will be one of the guys introduced when they bring out the Hall of Famer. So he will be in the building. And you have this no-holds-barred stipulation where there must be a winner. There is no disqualifications. Anything goes, including outside interference. And I could envision a scenario where later on in the match, Shawn comes out and maybe even teases it for a brief moment as far as who he might go after, and then super kicks The Undertaker to a mixed reaction, which leads to Triple H crawling ever so slowly to cover Taker, and of course, Undertaker kicks out at the very last moment. That right there would be the almost a perfect near fall in that match if they wanted to do it. So, would not be surprised if Shawn gets involved in the match. I just wanted to put that out there. So, again, you don't know what you're going to get physically in this match from The Undertaker. Vince McMahon decided at the last minute that he wanted no references at all whatsoever to their previous match at WrestleMania 17, which, again, could have added a little more depth to all of this. The promos are basically the same recycled promos every single week. Triple H comes out, he says the same shit. The Undertaker comes out, he says the same shit. I'm really underwhelmed by this build-up, and if this is the match that's main eventing the show, if this is the match that's going on last, they're going to have to really pull something out from their sleeve on Monday night. They're having a Triple H Undertaker big face-to-face confrontation. I don't know that there's going to be any physicality, so if we're going to get more talking, I don't know what else they could possibly say that hasn't already been said. But they're going to have to really do something to get me excited for this match. I did think the video package later in the show with comments from Shawn and Steve Austin, rather, Arn Anderson, Harley Race, Chris Jericho, I thought that was really well done. And it clearly positions this match as the real main event of the show, which if it is, again, they've got to do a little bit more than they've been doing. Speaking of Chris Jericho, I almost forgot. Jericho made his debut on Dancing with the Stars on Monday night. Of course, they were very smart to put Jericho on in the second hour. Dancing with the Stars went on at 8, Raw went on at 9, and Jericho came on during the 9 o'clock hour. I'm sure that was not done by accident, let's put it that way. And as far as how he did, I thought he did fine. I'm not a dancing expert. He dances a hell of a lot better than I can. Apparently, he only ranked middle of the pack. I think he came in, what did he come in, fifth place or something out of, I don't even know how many people are on the show. I know he got a 19 out of 30 for a score, which is, you know, it's pretty good. It's not great, but it's okay. So we'll see how he does. You know, he certainly wasn't the worst person on the show, but the Karate Kid, Kirstie Alley, got much bigger pops, if you want to use a wrestling term, than he did. They seem to get the biggest reactions out of anybody on the show. And the one thing I think that worked against Jericho, he's got such a great personality that they didn't do enough to showcase that. I'm not saying it should be the Chris Jericho show, but I don't think that if you have any idea, if you have no idea who Chris Jericho is prior to Monday night, I don't think they did a good enough job of letting you in on exactly who he is. I think if people learned a little bit more about him, they might like him a little bit more. Let's be honest. A show like this is all about personality. And if people think that you're obnoxious and you're annoying, which Jericho can be, I mean, that could also work against him. If they learn more about him, they might think he's the most obnoxious jerk in the world and vote him off the next week. So I think that actually, but again, we'll see what the format dictates, if maybe they'll show more footage of him outside of, you know, being on the live show, maybe in his preparation. They didn't really touch, you know, they mentioned he was a pro wrestler. They didn't really touch too much on that. They didn't mention Fozzy at all, I don't think. Jericho did some interviews this week where, and actually he did an interview with our own Noah Mark for Noah's radio station and was asked about whether or not we might see Fozzy perform on Dancing with the Stars, and he didn't rule it out. Apparently it's been talked about. I mean, if that happened, that would be pretty cool. So, again, if you're a Chris Jericho fan and want to support him, I don't have the phone number in front of me, but you can vote for him each week, and hopefully he'll make it a little bit further than he did on the last reality show he appeared on, which he talked about in his book. He was on a Fox reality show called Celebrity Duets a couple of years ago during his off time from WWE, and he was the first person eliminated. It was complete bullshit. But yeah, he was the first one eliminated on that show. I think Jericho will be safe for at least another week, so hopefully he will improve. Anyway, back to Raw. So, Triple H annihilates poor Ted DiBiase after his boring promo. And by that, I mean Triple H. Although you could say the same thing about DiBiase's promo. Here's the thing about DiBiase. The only thing I could speculate on is that this poor guy, he must have sneezed, not in front of Vince McMahon. He probably sneezed on Vince McMahon. I mean, just snot and slime everywhere to end up in the position that he's in right now. I mean, I know he has no real charisma to speak of, but still. I mean, this is the guy that John Cena himself, in an interview that I vividly recall from a couple of years ago, once said would be main eventing WrestleMania against him within 2 or 3 years. And that was 2 or 3 years ago. And look at him now. It's just sad. Sheamus beats Evan Bourne again. It was so quick that if you blinked, you would have missed it. It looks like we'll get that rematch at WrestleMania for the championship of the United States between Sheamus and Daniel Bryan. That'll be Daniel Bryan's first WrestleMania match, and that's pretty cool. I mean, anybody that's been a Daniel Bryan fan going back to Ring of Honor and, you know, his work elsewhere, you know, him getting his first Mania match is a big deal, just like it's a big deal to Jerry Lawler. And it's taken him, well, let's see, 27 WrestleManias. It's taken him that long to get his first WrestleMania match. So good for him. Randy Orton arrives in a tour bus, by the way, for those of you who have asked. He really does own a tour bus. Many of the top stars now do, including Triple H and Stephanie, who have their own bus so that their kids can travel with them. All I could think about when I first saw this bus was the DX Express from 2000 that Steve Austin destroyed on an episode of SmackDown. We, in fact, did not see any vehicular destruction on this show, but it still took a predictable turn. I'll get to that in a moment. And by the way, for the other people who have asked, that was not Randy Orton's actual tour bus, although he does have one. Michael Cole interrupts another Divas match. I believe it was right around this segment that Jericho appeared on Dancing with the Stars, and I was just wishing that I had one of those picture-in-picture TVs, which I don't. I kept flipping back and forth. So he interrupts the Eve, I believe it was Eve against Maryse match. And you know, the thing about this, at least now it appears they're actually going somewhere with this. They had Eve try to beat him up after the match, and he mocked her. She was really angry. And I'm guessing at WrestleMania that Cole is in for a Diva beatdown, either during or after his match with Jerry Lawler. So then we have a John Cena interview via satellite, we are told, which I hope was intended for irony, because there is not a human being on this planet who could possibly believe Cena was sitting in his house, because he is, his house looks an awful lot like the WWE backstage area on any given week. Not only that, but he's sitting there wearing his stupid purple shirt, his stupid purple hat. Are we supposed to believe that he actually wears that when he's at home, too? I mean, are we supposed to believe that perhaps Cena has no other clothes besides that and just wears the same thing over and over again? I mean, is he even more frugal with his money than Mick Foley? So, Cena cuts this promo that was at least not as cheesy as they usually are, and really didn't say anything of note. This was basically just to set up the surprise run-in later on in that show that everybody knew was coming. So, then we have the segment with Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, which was, again, the best thing on the entire show, but even this was a bit dull, to be perfectly honest, and seemed like they were just spinning their wheels. I mean, the big announcement that Cole was touting all night was that Brian Christopher, Lawler's son, had sent Cole a family photo album to show the world. I mean, that was the big announcement. I mean, I figured maybe there were going to be at least photoshopped pictures that would be a little bit funny. But nope, they showed really old photos of Lawler with his father, who actually died when Jerry was, I believe, 19. And then Cole basically said that Lawler's entire family was stupid. This all led to Lawler chasing after Cole and being attacked and put in the ankle lock by Jack Swagger. He then told Cole to put the ankle lock on Lawler, which he did. To me, this is easily the best promoted match on the entire pay-per-view. And it certainly cannot be any worse in my book than Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam Bigelow at WrestleMania 11, which went on last. So why not just end the show with Cole getting his comeuppance? I mean, really, what? More so than Triple H and The Undertaker, which I'm sure in the end will be a better match. I'm not saying Cole and Lawler will be a good wrestling match. But in terms of the matches on this show, and if you had to rank them from worst promoted to best promoted, this would easily be the best promoted match. You know, they've taken their time, they've built this up over the course of many months. They built up Cole's character over the course of almost a year. Most of the stuff they've been doing with him and Lawler the last couple of weeks has been just near perfection, even though this week, again, I thought was a little bit dull. And I should actually just make this one note. I'm not saying that Lawrence Taylor and Bam Bam was the worst match in WrestleMania history. It actually was not. And if I remember correctly, LT actually did pretty good for himself. He was really gassed at the end of that match, but as far as bringing in a celebrity for a match or an appearance, he actually did pretty good for himself at that WrestleMania. But the point is, all this talk about how, you know, this is not a match that deserves to be in the main event slot, or that the title match should go on last, which apparently it's not. I don't think you can do a lot worse than putting Lawler and Cole on last. I know they're not going to do it, but I'm just putting it out there that if I were booking the show, I would at least consider it. By the way, I feel that this is a a good moment in the show here, an appropriate time to play another flashback clip. This is from January 29th, 2002. Another radio appearance of mine on WRMU Radio, with a bit of prognosticating on my part at the end as it relates to Michael Cole. Rewind.
Because nobody wants to watch pound for pound wrestlers anymore.
They want to see
the Wolverine.
He throwing up on.
No, it didn't.
Tell me that wasn't the funniest thing you've seen in the past year.
Booker T throwing up on Michael Cole.
You know, so that's where the blonde highlights in his hair come from.
Oh,
leave
man.
Michael Cole alone.
Michael Cole.
Poor guy. He's smaller than me.
Okay, I don't know where that came from.
No, I mean, the guy is a shrimp, man. Have you ever seen him walk
around?
He's
got to be standing about 5'4".
That's why they keep him, quite frankly. It's fun to pick on him.
Exactly. And he's getting paid.
I think they miss a boat. Look, when they had Kevin Kelly interviewing The Rock every week, and The Rock would turn around and call him Hermie and would have him stick a finger up his nose, I was waiting for the day that Kevin Kelly was going to turn around and, like, hit him over the head with a microphone and have, like, a feud. And then they dropped the ball. They could do the same thing with Michael Cole.
Just like always.
The Michael Cole feud.
Seems I was a bit before my time, or I guess ahead of my time, when I was talking about a potential Michael Cole feud, but 9 years later, and here we are. The stuff with the Core and Kane and Big Show, I honestly could care less about, so I'm not even going to talk about it. We had Morrison and Trish Stratus in what became a handicap match against Dolph Ziggler, Lay Cool, and Vicky Guerrero, and I just could not believe this. Now, I know that very few people are going to actually buy the pay-per-view for this match. And in fact, were it not for Snooki's involvement, I'd say zero people would be buying the pay-per-view for this. But still, they basically gave us the WrestleMania match on TV 2 weeks before the show. Now, I suppose it was a way to get heat on Vicky, since she scored the pin on Morrison in the end. And she'll get her comeuppance at the pay-per-view. But of all the people in WWE, let's be honest, does Vicky Guerrero really need any more heat? I mean, she's got more heat than a nuclear reactor. I don't think she needs any more heat. I don't think she's the one that you need to be too concerned about when it comes to that sort of stuff. We had a WrestleMania 22 rewind match, sans Kurt Angle, of course, between Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio, which could be seen as a pretty big match between two babyfaces, but it went like 3 or 4 minutes before CM Punk showed up on the TitanTron teasing, torturing Randy's family on the bus. So Orton sprints out of the ring into the back, and Punk attacks him in the leg with a wrench, I guess to eliminate the threat of a punt at the pay-per-view. Meanwhile, Orton's supposed wife, who looks nothing like the first wife in 2009, coincidentally when Triple H broke into his house, she's on the bus shrieking and screaming, and Punk basically mocks her and tells her to shut up, which was the highlight of the entire show for me. The acting here was River of Darkness bad. If you don't get that reference, listen to last week's podcast. Although, sadly, we did not get Zombie Kevin Nash or Psycho Sid Vicious. I don't know where they find all of Orton's wives. All of his phony wives, I might add. It was not his real wife, Samantha. But my God, these women cannot act. I mean, how hard is it to feign terror? She didn't look scared at all. And in fact, she looked rather indifferent to the entire thing. Now, once Punk left, she exited the bus to help Orton. She was yelling out for help, and of course the cameraman just stood there filming this and did absolutely nothing. So then we had the main event. Alex Riley was unfired and back as the Miz's new director of corporate communications. I'd hate to have that title and be working for Jeff Hardy these days. Out comes the Miz without his WWE title, and the ring is some sort of box or case that has a sheet over it, and I thought to myself, perhaps we're finally going to get a new championship belt. And of course, I was wrong, and instead, the big payoff to this segment that they teased all night, they built this fucking thing up the entire show, was the unveiling of the same exact goddamn spinner belt, only with the WWE logo flipped upside down in the form of an M. Because you see, the M is for Miz. Aha, I see what they did there. Whatever. Cena appears on the screen. He reveals that he's not really at home. He's backstage. He comes down to the ring, gets beat up for about 10 seconds by Miz and Riley, and then he turns the tables, beating them both up. He puts Riley in the STF while the Miz runs away. He refuses to let go of the hold. He showed a lot of fire here. You know, he was not silly Cena cracking jokes and smiling and everything, so I suppose that's a step in the right direction, but this was not a fun Raw. You know, Raw, to me, the last couple of weeks, whether it's The Rock or just the general build-up to WrestleMania, they've done a pretty good job of giving the show almost a must-see feel. And this week, it reminded me of any other Raw from any other week, which is fine. Not every show is going to be a home run. I would imagine that the show this week is going to be a lot better. There'll be a lot more going on. Obviously, The Rock is going to be live on Raw in Chicago this week. They have a Triple H Undertaker face-off that they're teasing. So it's going to be a good show. But this one was pretty ho-hum by usual Raw standards. Abdullah the Butcher, by the way, was announced for the Hall of Fame. There is a video up for him on WWE.com. He will be inducted by Terry Funk. And next week in Chicago, for those of you who have asked, they will likely, spoiler for those of you who don't want to be spoiled, but they will likely announce the Road Warriors as the final superstars to be inducted in the class of 2011 in the Hall of Fame. They will likely be inducted by Dusty Rhodes. So that should get a nice reaction from the hometown crowd in Chicago. So let's talk for a little bit here about the big story in wrestling this week. Let's talk about The Rock and John Cena, because I still get emails about this, and I myself still have some questions about this, and it's on everybody's mind. What is The Rock going to do at WrestleMania? We know he's hosting the show. We know he'll probably be in some backstage skits. Perhaps he'll have some interaction with Steve Austin on camera. Somebody's going to get the Rock Bottom. Somebody, probably The Miz, is going to get the People's Elbow. We know this. But that can't possibly be all that The Rock is going to do. Plus, The Rock has already been announced for Raw Live the night after WrestleMania. Now, perhaps The Rock is going to do exactly what he is advertised to do at the pay-per-view and then come out on Raw the next night and say goodbye for a couple of weeks. He's going to have to promote his new movie, the Fast and the Furious movie, coming out later next month. You know, when The Rock said in that promo, that very first promo he did, that he was back and he was never going to leave again, I didn't take that literally. Some of you did. I did not. I took that to mean, basically, you're going to see me a lot more often. It's not going to be another 7 years before you see me after WrestleMania is over. And that's fine, because that's really all anybody ever asked. You know, is that The Rock come back every now and then, show his face, even if he wasn't going to wrestle a match. And the wrinkle in all of this is that in some of the interviews that The Rock has done, including one interview with the Associated Press, when asked about whether or not he will in fact wrestle again, The Rock has been very non-committal. He has not said outright that he will wrestle again, but the answers he's giving is very, very different than the answers he was giving for years when he said, listen, I'm not going to wrestle again. I quietly retired in 2004. I had my last match at WrestleMania 20, Madison Square Garden. I've moved on. I'm an actor now. I will always be with the WWE, but I am not going to wrestle again. He has not said that. And in fact, a lot of the answers that he's been giving would lead one to believe that he will wrestle again. Now, I will say this. From the comments that he has made, and the build-up to this match, I've always, and I probably said this on the show at some point, I've said that unless everything that's been going on between these two guys results in a match, that it will be a disappointment. Now, if you want to disappoint everybody in the world in the worst possible way, then all The Rock has to do at WrestleMania is somehow align himself or make up with John Cena. I don't think that's going to happen. Especially if that match with Cena and Miz is not going to end the show, I think it will be left open-ended. And I hope it is, because even if The Rock has said he's not going to wrestle a match, it would be foolish to put Cena and The Rock together as friends in some way. Because maybe The Rock in 6 months or a year will change his mind. And if you leave things open and unresolved between him and Cena, you leave the door open to revisit this 6 months or a year from now. My gut tells me that not only is The Rock going to wrestle a match, he's going to wrestle a match with John Cena, and it will probably be sometime this year. It could be SummerSlam. SummerSlam is in Los Angeles. Hollywood certainly would make sense. If The Rock, assuming The Rock does not have any commitments this summer, when SummerSlam rolls around, I find it incredibly hard to believe that these are the answers he's giving. And that he would give these answers unless he knew in his heart he was in fact going to wrestle a match. I mean, I know that apparently whatever was planned originally when he and the WWE reached an agreement, he, in these appearances that he has made, he has been reinvigorated. And he has told them that he is open and willing to do more at WrestleMania than originally it was thought he would do. Now, unless you announce this Monday that The Rock is going to be added to the championship match, which would be completely, completely asinine, and I don't think that's going to happen, I take that to mean that he will be physical in some way. Probably more physical than he originally thought he would be. I have no idea what they have planned. I don't want to know. To me, the big hook for WrestleMania this year is what will they do with Cena and The Rock? And to be honest with you, where the Miz factors into all this, I really don't care. I'm sure it'll be good rub for him, but to me, the way this has been built up, The Miz, he's almost like this annoying fly that you're trying to swat away. People want to see Rock and Cena. They don't care about where The Miz falls into this equation. They've waited years for Cena-Rock, not Rock-Cena-Miz. So, for those people who are asking me, does this mean The Rock is going to wrestle again? I think he is. I think he's changed his tune. He's certainly saying things a lot differently than he has been for the last couple of months and the last couple of years. And this sounds like a guy who is going to wrestle a match. I don't know when. SummerSlam seems like a good fit. It's such a big match, it just wouldn't make sense to do it on any pay-per-view between now and SummerSlam. You could do it at WrestleMania next year, but I don't know about you, I don't want to wait another year. You know, it would be one thing if, and this was the thing with Hogan and Austin a couple of years ago, when there was still hope that Hogan and Austin perhaps would have a match. And the idea was that at WrestleMania, you make the announcement that Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin have agreed to fight one another. And it's going to happen at WrestleMania next year. And you take the next 12 months to build up to that match. That would have been an interesting experiment. But in this case, they've already been promoting Cena Rock. It feels like you're building to a match at WrestleMania this year between them. And then you kind of, you know, you wake up from your dream and you realize it's not Rock Cena, it's Cena Miz. But you already have 6 weeks or so of building up a match that now you're going to delay another year. It just seems way, way too far in advance. I know WrestleMania is in Miami. This is a WrestleMania-worthy match. It's not happening this year. There's not enough time left to promote it. To me, this screams SummerSlam. Maybe I'm wrong. But this sounds like a man that is going to wrestle another match. This does not sound like the same guy who for years said, I quietly retired. I did it the right way. I did it my way. I'm 40 years old. I don't want to wrestle another match. This sounds like a guy who wants to get in the ring, prove to people that he can still go. I have no doubt that he can. I mean, here's a 40-year-old guy. We used to make fun of guys. Oh, he's 40. He's taking up all the TV time. You have all these 40-year-old guys on TV. The Rock doesn't look like a 40-year-old guy or 39 or whatever he is. He looks like a guy that can get in the ring and kick your ass. And by the way, The Miz is the complete opposite of that. The Miz is not 40, but he does not look like a guy who can get in the ring and kick your ass. Hence the reason I think why people would much rather see Cena Rock at WrestleMania. But I want to mention one other thing from this interview here. There's a quote from John Cena. This is what John Cena said. He said, I can't tell you how much it plugs our product back in. This is in reference to The Rock being back. It's like getting hooked up to defibrillators. It's the one little jumpstart that we needed. Now, I get what he's trying to say, and I agree. You know, the product 6 months ago compared to the way it seems to be now, not that the product now is so exciting and so perfect, but since The Rock came back, ratings are up, attendance is up, they've sold out like 4 or 5 Raws in a row. It just feels more exciting. That's because of The Rock. So John Cena is not wrong in saying that. But to do an interview and to basically say, hey, our product was on life support before this guy showed up, and now finally we're showing signs of life. We're showing a pulse. I don't know if he realized it when he made the comment, as true as it is. That's not the sort of thing I'd want the face of my company, the top star in my company, to be saying when he's in the media doing interviews. That our product sucked. Our product was boring until The Rock showed up. And now we're showing signs of life. We might actually survive. We might actually make it. It's not the way I would want to promote WrestleMania. Rewind.
The wet t-shirt contest between Trish Stratus and Terry Runnels there. Trish never got
to get wet, but Terry didn't. The King was in the ring with the Super Soaker, and he actually pushed the button a little too soon and dropped the line. I think I shot a little too soon.
There you go. A little premature.
A little premature. And that was another good line from Raw.
He thought he was pumping the gun.
You count on the King for one or two good lines at Raw. He's probably the best color man out there.
Definitely.
It was so good to see the King back.
He works so well with any he can work with any play-by-play man. And just
he even makes Michael Cole look good, and that's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Michael Cole in the news this weekend, making news that I'm sure he and WWE wished was not made. Michael Cole is new to the Twitter world, you see. I'm sure he was forced into it by WWE. And he's only been on Twitter, I think, for a couple of weeks. Or at least they've only been promoting his Twitter since last Monday. And already he's gotten himself into a lot of hot water. He made a comment to his Raw broadcast colleague, and SmackDown, I guess, broadcast colleague, Josh Matthews. And he was responding to a Josh Matthews tweet that I don't believe was directed to Cole, but Cole responded to it, and he responded with one simple word, and that word was faggot. Now, who's to say what goes on behind the scenes in WWE, and, you know, what is said behind the scenes stays behind the scenes. Yeah, I've heard about Michael Cole, and he uses a lot of foul language and stuff like that, and supposedly he's a really fun guy to hang around. What in his right mind could have possessed him to not only use that word in a public forum, but to think that he would tweet something like that, especially when he's being followed by mostly people that probably hate his guts, and not have any repercussions from that? What would make him believe that he could get away with something like that? Now, he took the tweet down. He promptly apologized for it, claiming at first that he wasn't pressured to do so. He was apologizing on his own. And then I think he took that tweet down as well. So if he wasn't pressured, believe me, he would have heard about this. This comes, of course, on the heels of GLAAD. I talked about this last week on the show, criticizing WWE for some homophobic remarks that John Cena made in his freestyle raps a couple of weeks ago. Cena apologized for it. Apparently they're going to have some sort of, it's almost like these sexual harassment seminars that they have in certain workplaces. I think WWE is hosting some sort of GLAAD-sponsored seminar for their employees or wrestlers or whoever, and Cole will be a part of that to show them the damage that is done when one makes such remarks like this in a public forum. The bottom line to all of this is it wouldn't have been a big deal since he apologized for it, and I'm sure he'll never do it again, but TMZ picked up on the story, plastered it on their website. Apparently they're going to also feature it on their television show this Monday. And I would assume that Cole is not going to be suspended. He's not going to be taken off TV. If he's punished in any way, it'll probably be a fine or a tongue lashing, you know, perhaps. But it was just a really, really stupid thing for him to do. You know, there's certain words. George Carlin used to talk about the seven dirty words. And there's certain words that you just don't use, whether it's on television. Twitter is a very public forum that's still relatively new. People are still getting accustomed to it. They're going to make mistakes. I mean, just look at Matt and Jeff Hardy. But Michael Cole is in many ways, he calls himself the face, the voice of WWE. He is their primary play-by-play announcer, and probably will be for the foreseeable future. And it's a big deal when your primary play-by-play guy, I mean, this could be, imagine if this was Jim Ross or Gordon Solie back in the day had a Twitter. I can't possibly picture that, but let's just assume he did. Going on Twitter and calling somebody a fag, it just wouldn't fly. But the difference is they wouldn't have been dumb enough in the first place to go ahead and do something like that. Perhaps Cole felt that, you know, he's in kayfabe, he keeps character a lot on that Twitter. Perhaps he felt that it was being done in character. Although even in character, it's a really stupid thing to say. But again, this is the problem when you have your primary play-by-play guy, as awesome as he has been in the role that he has been playing as a character, not as an announcer. But still, when you have your primary play-by-play guy being a heel on television, which automatically kills his credibility, which is a completely different problem. Unfortunately, shit like this happens. And like I said, this is not the last of this story. It'll probably blow up again on Monday. But just a really stupid thing for him to do. And to me, the biggest thing it'll be interesting if WWE forces him to apologize for it on television. I don't know if that perhaps is something that GLAAD would request. They didn't request that John Cena apologize on TV, but would WWE have him go on TV, even though this happened on the internet, and publicly apologize that way for it? I guess we'll find out on Monday night. Speaking of stupid, Kurt Angle was arrested on Friday morning in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where TNA had a house show scheduled that night that Kurt, in fact, did appear at. He appeared to be fine. He had a match that night against Jeff Jarrett, but earlier that morning, he was charged with being in control of a motor vehicle while intoxicated. Again, this was a story broken by TMZ, so note to wrestlers and announcers and everybody else, this is the TMZ generation here. You don't get away with anything. It's not like it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. You got to be careful. In this case, Kurt, it's hard to say exactly what he did wrong, because the story states that the police found him sitting in his car in the median that separated the lanes of traffic on the road. And they said that Angle told police that he had hit an icy patch on the road. The officers smelled alcohol on his breath, and Kurt was given a field sobriety test that he failed, and that's why he was arrested. Now, because police never actually saw him driving while intoxicated, he was not arrested for drunk driving. So he was charged with being drunk behind the wheel of a car, which is not as serious of a charge. He was released, and as I said, he was on the show that night. Now, Kurt, a couple of years ago, back in 2007, had a DUI case that was very well publicized near his home in Pittsburgh. He was found not guilty of that later on. There was a female witness who claimed that he was driving recklessly, described his car, and police found him later on at his home. They believed he had been drinking then as well. But in that case, no police officers actually saw him driving recklessly, nor could they prove that he had been intoxicated while driving, even though he was intoxicated at his home. So, you know, charges ultimately were dropped against him. But this again, it shows a pattern. And Kurt can defend himself and claim that he wasn't actually driving while he was drunk, apparently. There's no evidence to prove that he was. But again, if his car is sitting in the middle of traffic and they administer a field sobriety test and he fails, I suppose you could argue that the poor guy hit an icy patch and got stuck and decided, well, I got nothing else to do, so I'll just get drunk here in the car. That doesn't answer the question, of course, of what he planned to do once he was able to kind of restart the vehicle and get back on the road. You know, would he have waited until he was sober? Perhaps. But either way, it shows a troubling pattern of behavior with Kurt. Speaking of Kurt, I talked about his movie last week. I did my River of Darkness review, which was an awesomely awful movie. And I noticed this week there is a website that is now set up that is actually selling River of Darkness t-shirts. They actually have merchandise for this movie. And I think it's on Kurt Angle's own website. And the page for the t-shirts reads as follows. Okay, this is an exact quote. I'm not paraphrasing here. This is what it says, or it said as of a couple of days ago. Be the first in your neighborhood to buy official River of Darkness t-shirts. Put them on the corpses of your dead friends or sport it yourself. Put them on the corpses of your dead friends. Wow. There's a morbid thought for you. Speaking of Kurt Angle news doesn't end this week. Dread Central reported that Kurt has actually signed up for yet another horror movie. This one is going to be called Death from Above, and it too will feature several different wrestlers in it, as did River of Darkness. In this one, Kurt is being cast as a druid demon, and his greatest nemesis will be none other than Master Thespian, I kid you not, Psycho Sid Vicious, who, by the way, and I said this last week, had no lines in River of Darkness. He made those Sid stares, those Sid facial expressions. He just stared at you. He didn't say a goddamn word. And apparently he has been cast in this movie as well. Other TNA stars in this movie apparently are going to be James Storm and Matt Morgan, Now, this is the official synopsis of the movie, which I'm going to read this word for word because it just sounds fantastic. An ancient druid demon has returned to claim his prize, to reign over the world through 1,000 years of darkness. The last time druid demon Thul, being played by Kurt Angle, walked the earth was during the Dark Ages. Now, after 1,000 years, he has returned from beyond to assemble his pagan monk worshippers and to wreak havoc on the natural world. The character Gunner, which is not Gunner, in fact, of Gunner and Murphy fame from TNA. This is played by James Storm. An ordinary blue-collar steelworker is plagued by disturbing nightmares and discovers through a clairvoyant gypsy that his ancestral bloodline and a family heirloom place him in danger of Thule's evil dark path. As the drama mounts, Thule's twisted and escalating rampage of death and destruction will soon collide with this small town to square off against overzealous Sheriff Rainick, played by Tom Savini, but one man stands between him and his ultimate reign, Herzog, played by Psycho Sid Vicious. The two forces face off in a battle of good versus evil in this low-budget thriller, I'll say. Will Thule reign once again over the world into 1,000 years of darkness? And that's it. That's the end of it. I thought there was more. I guess that's the synopsis for the movie. So it doesn't say here when this is being filmed or when it will be available. I assume probably sometime later next year. But I don't know how he keeps getting these movie roles. Obviously, these are not highly sought-after movie roles, I suppose. These are not big-budget blockbusters. But Kurt Angle is just not a great actor. And, you know, he could be in movies, I guess, but not in the lead role. Maybe what happened is Kurt saw a final copy of River of Darkness this past week, and it drove him to drink. Maybe that's what happened, and he was too ashamed to admit it to the police officers. Let's play another clip. Rewind.
He had a line, I think Brandon also laughed at it. He had a line on Raw. He was, Kurt Angle was backstage talking about, you know, what's the big deal with Triple H being back. You know, he's out like 8 months with a quad injury. He's like, I mean, what's the big deal? I rolled out of bed this morning and tore my quad, and look at me, I'm fine.
Wait. Did he say something about he won the gold medal with a broken neck?
Yeah. I mean, the guy's great.
Quick announcement here before we get to the mailbag this week. And by the way, again, thank you for bearing with me here. I'm still very stuffed up. Can barely hear out of one of my ears, so hopefully I don't sound too awful this week. But WrestleMania is coming up next weekend, as you are all well aware. Our own webmaster Mike, in fact, and Noah are going to be live at the Georgia Dome for WrestleMania this Sunday. And on SEScoops.com, for the benefit of those of you perhaps who are not watching the pay-per-view or cannot for whatever reason, there will be WrestleMania live coverage on SEScoops.com beginning this Sunday night for WrestleMania 27. Coverage that will be anchored by yours truly, the Solomonster. I will be watching WrestleMania from the comfort of my own home, and I will be posting live results from the show as the show goes along. So for those of you who aren't watching the pay-per-view, you get the next best thing. You get me. What could be better than that? So again, tune your browser into SE Scoops this Sunday. Don't bother with any other website. Go to SE Scoops for your WrestleMania live coverage after each match, each segment. The results will be posted along with perhaps some of my thoughts. And just wanted to put that out there now. I'm sure that you'll see more announcements about this on the website as we get closer to next weekend. But the deal was just brokered, so I figured I would mention that now here on the Sound Off. That, of course, is this weekend right here on SEScoops.com. All right, enough of that. Let's get to the mailbag. Ryan writes in. He says, on the almighty Wikipedia, he read that former WWF president Jack Tunney died in 2004, and it states that no one from WWE attended his funeral. That saddened me, as I have fond memories of Tunney and old-school WWF. Do you have any idea why nobody would attend? Did he leave on bad terms? I cannot confirm that nobody from WWE attended the funeral. That sounds about right. I don't think he was close to that many people in the company. And as far as whether or not he left on bad terms, I don't know the nature of the breakup between him and WWF, if there was anything specific that caused it. The only thing I do know is that he was not very fond of Vince McMahon Jr. I don't believe they got along very well at all. And I believe the last year on television that he was acknowledged as being in the WWF or being the president of the WWF was, if I'm remembering correctly, it would have been 1995 or 96. Because after that, the name Jack Tunney was simply not mentioned on television anymore. Gorilla Monsoon was appointed president. I believe it was. It had to have been late 95. Mid to late 95, I believe, is when Monsoon was announced as the new president of the World Wrestling Federation. So it probably would have been 95 when Jack Tunney went out of the company. You know, Tunney was a promoter in his own right, and his brother Frank was also a promoter, I believe, up in Canada. So, you know, the Tunney brothers, they were wrestling promoters as well. But I know the relationship between Jack Tunney and Vince McMahon was not great. I don't know if he had any bad blood with anybody else in the company, like a Jack Lanza or a Pat Patterson or a Gorilla Monsoon or somebody like that. But I know him and Vince were not on the best of terms. And in fact, when he died in 04, I don't believe there was any acknowledgement on TV about it. I could be wrong. I don't remember there being a Jack Tunney graphic or video, which he absolutely should have gotten. I mean, did he do a lot? Did he wrestle? Did he appear on TV all the time? No. But anybody who grew up watching the WWF in the mid to late 80s, throughout the 90s, into the mid 90s, they knew who Jack Tunney was, and they had a certain respect for him, or for the character that he played on TV. Now, was he the real president of the World Wrestling Federation? No. I believe the extent to which he did work for WWF, and again, I'm not a Jack Tunney expert here, but to my knowledge, he, I believe, helped in terms of promoting WWF locally, perhaps in Canada and in certain areas. He helped in terms of local promotion. That's the real role he played for the company. But as far as being the president, that was specifically a role designed for TV. But I have vivid memories of Jack Tunney, you know, chiming in to make an important announcement, or, you know, Jack Tunney standing in the ring at the 1992 Royal Rumble with the championship, which was vacant, and he comes out before the Rumble and he's being booed out of the building. I mean, Jack Tunney was vilified by the fans. The fans did not like that man. Hulk Hogan, as a character on TV, would always talk trash about Jack Tunney. He didn't like him either. It was a role that he was not a very beloved figure, but he was an important figure to a lot of people who grew up on WWF during that era. And to think that he never got an acknowledgement, to the best of my knowledge, on TV is a slap in the face. So that's the best answer I could give you to that question. There was no love lost between him and Vince, but what the nature of the breakup was, maybe there was a contract that simply expired and they chose not to renew it. I don't know if he was fired. I don't know if he quit. Perhaps somebody can shed some more light on that for me, but you know, nobody from WWF showing up at his funeral, it could very well have happened. I can't confirm that, but there definitely was bad blood between the two sides. They just did not like each other. Brett in California has a very simple question. The greatest WWE championship reign ever, Dolph Ziggler or the Brian Kendrick? Note that I am considering temporary championship reigns as official. Obviously, he is referring to the time in one of the scramble matches that Brian Kendrick won a fall, and for that brief, fleeting few minutes, I guess technically was considered the world champion before, obviously, he lost and got eliminated. I would have to say Brian Kendrick, more so than Dolph Ziggler. At least Kendrick actually won a fall, even if it's not officially. See, here's the difference, though. Ziggler is officially recognized as a former world champion. Kendrick is not. They don't count that as a real title reign. But having said that, hey, at least Kendrick won a fall, and it was in a match on pay-per-view, no less. Whereas Ziggler, I don't remember Ziggler ever even wearing the championship. I don't even know that he ever touched it. You know, they simply said that by virtue, I guess, of Edge using the spear, he kind of backdoored his way into the title, and then, of course, he ended up losing, or the decision was, I don't even remember how Dolph Ziggler lost the belt. And this was just a couple of weeks ago, but I'll go with Kendrick. At least Kendrick won a fall in a real match on pay-per-view. Jamal has an interesting letter here. He says, being a frequent visitor to your Facebook page, SE Scoops, and other wrestling news gathering spots, I've noticed that wrestling fans really hate wrestling. After some deliberation, I've come to the conclusion that knowing too much about the behind-the-scenes aspects of the business has blurred people's criticisms. The internet is to blame. I've also noticed, being around my nephew and his friends who watch Raw, that younger people have a much simpler respect for the business. and aren't as critical about the way WWE or TNA is run. They enjoy the show for what it is to them. It is real. In some ways, I envy them and can remember the days when I thought Hogan was truly unbeatable, much like they view John Cena. What do you think about this and the current state of wrestling fans? All valid points. You make very valid points. Wrestling, when you were younger, when I was younger, was much simpler. And I can remember angles on the syndicated shows, you know, Superstars, on Saturday mornings, when Rick Martel and Jake Roberts were on the Brother Love show, and Martel sprayed arrogance into Jake's eyes and blinded him. And for weeks after that, Jake walked around blind as a bat. And they had put a contact lens in one of his eyes where all you saw was the whites of his eye, which was freaky. Of course, I look at that now and I'm like, oh, they put a contact lens in his eye. I didn't know any better when I was younger, and neither did you. Or even angles that, you know, the NWA did on television when the Horsemen would attack people, be it Dusty Rhodes when the Road Warriors took a spike to Dusty's eye and stuff like that. It was so much more real. I agree 100%. Here's the problem with your argument, though. You didn't tell me how old your nephew is. You said he's younger. So I'll assume that I don't know how old you are. Let's just assume your nephew is in the 9 to 12-year-old range. Maybe I'm off, but let's just assume that. And, again, he is at a point that you and I were both at once upon a time where maybe he thinks wrestling is real. I mean, by that point in my life, I knew it wasn't real, but maybe he thinks it's real, and even if he doesn't know all of the behind-the-scenes activities. So you're right. His view of wrestling is not as tainted, for lack of a better term, than it might be for you or me. The problem is this. We cannot grow young again. There's only one way to go from here. It's up, not down. You and I are older than we used to be. We're more mature, I hope, than we used to be. And we know a lot more about life in general than we used to. And here's the other thing. The internet. The internet was not around when I was that age. Perhaps it wasn't around when you were at that age. The internet is still a relatively new invention. Twitter and Facebook, these things are brand new. And again, it's just one of those things where even if SE Scoops was not around, and even if I didn't do this podcast, and no other wrestling site was around, and there were no wrestling dirt sheets or anything of that nature, you would still be naturally inquisitive. You would want to know what's going on behind the scenes. You would want to know these things, even if you tried as hard as you wanted to stay away from the Sound Off and to stay away from wrestling sites. You know what? These things are ruining wrestling for me. I'm not going to go to any news sites anymore. I'm just going to watch wrestling, and that's that, and I bet I'm going to enjoy it more. If anything, I guarantee you would enjoy it less. Because now that you've been exposed to all of this, you can't undo that. You cannot unlearn what you've learned. People are naturally inquisitive. As you get older and as you become more hip to the way things are done, you want more information. It's a natural thing. It applies to wrestling. It applies to anything. You want to know more. You're 20-something years old, let's say. You are not going to believe that wrestling is real. Perhaps your nephew does, but you don't. So now that you know it's not real, and you know that it's a show, and it's a show that you probably don't enjoy as much as you did 10 years ago, your only options are to stop watching it or keep watching it, but you can follow along with the things that are going on behind the scenes and whatnot by going to websites like SE Scoops and the other ones that are out there. It's a natural progression. Most people, I think, who are real wrestling fans, who don't fall out of it at a certain age, are going to grow up and they're going to reach that age and they're going to flock to websites like this and they're going to flock to podcasts like this. It's a natural thing. It happened to me. It happened to you. People want to know more. You can't dumb yourself down. You know it's not real. You know it's entertainment. You can't pretend that it isn't. It's not going to work. Life doesn't work that way. Now, are people who run wrestling sites and do wrestling shows naturally more critical of the product than anybody else? Perhaps. Perhaps they're a little too critical sometimes. I just look at myself. I can't pay attention to what other people do. Do I notice when I go on a rant about something, when I go on a rant about TNA, for example, that my podcast numbers go up? Yes, I do notice that a lot. But that doesn't mean that I go out of my way to criticize it just because I know more people are going to listen. I do my shows and for my opinions based on what I see on TV. I don't exaggerate them. I don't pretend to hate something when I really like it. What you see is what you get. What you are hearing right now is my honest-to-God thoughts about what I've seen, what I've heard, what I've read. Again, I can't speak for everybody else. If that makes me a naturally critical person, then so be it. Maybe I am. And I know you weren't talking about me specifically, but I'm using myself as an example. I try not to be overly critical, but unfortunately, if you take a look at wrestling the last several years, there's not a whole... I shouldn't say there's not a whole lot to like, but there's more to be critical about than there is to like. Especially when you and I and a lot of other people like to compare wrestling now to the way it used to be. It's a natural thing. You can't avoid it. You're going to draw those comparisons, for example, to how, you know, the WWE product is now as compared to the way it was 12 years ago. Oh, it was so great back then, which, by the way, it wasn't. That's another fallacy there. But, oh, it was so great back then. Why can't it be that way now? Well, because that was then and this is now. That was 1998 and this is 2011. The world is a different place. You know, there's different people who work behind the scenes. There's different people who are on the roster. Things cannot be exactly as they used to be. But a lot of what we saw on TV before The Rock came back and before they started building the Jerry Lawler, Michael Cole stuff and all that, a lot of the stuff we saw on Raw just wasn't that good. And when they had something that was good, they would cut the legs off and they would end it early or they would go in a different direction. And that's why people like me get pissed off, and that's why people like me go on rants and they get very excited and very animated over these things, which isn't always the smartest thing to do. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just wrestling. You know, it's meant for fun, but you're listening to a wrestling podcast right now because you really, really like wrestling. So I'm willing to bet that you care about wrestling. And that's where the problem is. When people care too much about wrestling, they could be a little too overly critical because they want it to be better. And then when it gets better, they're still critical because they know it could be even better than that. It's this never-ending, vicious cycle. So anyway, I know I just went on this long rant here, but swinging back around to your original question, you're talking about two totally different worlds. You're talking about a young kid watching wrestling who thinks it's real compared to an older person who knows it's not real, who knows it's entertainment. I mean, hell, it's more entertainment now than it ever has been. They don't even want to call it wrestling anymore. It's just a completely different product. It's a completely different world. And that would be my view on the whole thing. You know it's not real. I know it's not real. Our viewpoint instantly changes once we know that. You know, once you find out Santa Claus isn't real, it changes your whole view of things. Kieran writes in, where have the Motor City Machine Guns gone? I believe Alex Shelley suffered an injury. I want to say it was a fractured collarbone. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I know Alex Shelley got hurt, and so that's why you have not seen them on TV lately. All right. Adrian writes in, here from Trinidad, West Indies, a listener since episode 147. Dear Solid Monster, please give my country a huge shout-out. There are very few who know about us, and we're a very passionate country when it comes to wrestling. Well, most of us, anyway. Let's see here. Anyway, I'm a WWE nerd. Every year, the first thing I look forward to when it's Mania time is the WrestleMania logo. Which is your favorite WrestleMania logo? And he goes on to list several of his that are favorites, including 19, 20, 23, 25, and 26. In all honesty, my favorite WrestleMania logo is still the original. And if I had to pick one other than the original, I probably would go with WrestleMania 14, that red kind of cubed logo. I don't know why. I used to have a poster for that WrestleMania with that the Mike Tyson, Shawn Michaels, Steve Austin one, and the giant logo right in the middle. I'm rather partial to that one. I don't know why, but yeah, if I had to pick one other than the original, my vote would be with 14. Prince writes in, Solid Monster, explain to me how or why does WWE say that an event was sold out in minutes? Is that even possible? I was watching the WrestleMania History DVD, and in it they say that a WrestleMania was sold out in 1 minute. That would mean that all the tickets were sold on the internet. In that case, why would people camp out in front of the arena? Surely it takes more than a minute to sell a ticket and collect money from a fan. Exactly. You just answered your own question. Why would people line up for hours, perhaps even days in some cases, is completely irrational to me. Maybe years ago, I could see that. It's like these people who line up whenever Apple puts something on sale, like the iPad 2, for example. And all these Apple fanboys, and hey, I got an iPhone 4. I love Apple products. But you have all these Apple fanboys who will buy anything. I mean, if the CEO of Apple took a crap and put it on a stick and sold it, you would have a line out the door down 15 blocks to buy it. I mean, the iPad 2 is on back order by 5 or 6 weeks right now. And I'm sure it's a wonderful product. It's a product that I have absolutely no use for. Most people don't. But hey, I'm sure it's a fantastic device. And people were lined up. You wouldn't even believe it if I told you. People were lined up for days for this product. In fact, Webmaster Mike had led me to a story, which I didn't even believe at first. But when that device went on sale, I know I'm going off the rails a little bit here, but bear with me. There was a woman who was kind of at the head of the line, and she sold her spot in line for an iPad for $900. So when the next iPad goes on sale, the Solomonster is going to be one of the first people in line. Not to buy the fucking thing, but to see if I could sell my spot in line and if I could possibly top what that woman made. Maybe I could sell my spot for $1,000. And then I could do a sound off that weekend, and I can mock that person on the podcast and make fun of them. Now, perhaps there's people listening right now who have waited in one of these lines for WrestleMania tickets. WrestleMania is one of those special events where I guess sort of, kind of, I could see that. But again, we're in an internet age where tickets are always going to go on sale first on the internet. And that, to go back to your question, is how they can announce that they had sold out tickets in a minute. Because there's a pre-sale, tickets will usually go on sale on the internet first, or at least at the same time. And yes, the majority of those orders will come from the internet. And people who are closer to the front of the line are probably going to be able to get tickets. And then they sell out, and they tell everybody else in line, "Well, sorry, we're all sold out, so you can all go home now." And then inevitably, before the event, they free up some more tickets once they have the building set up. So the point of all this is, it is stupid to stand in line that long for anything. If you have a computer and a working internet connection, just buy your fucking tickets online. It's going to be so much easier. I guarantee it'll make your life so much easier if you do that. Got a letter here from Hank in Arcadia, California, which is about a very important topic, and it's not even so much something I'm going to respond to, but it's something that I feel is worthy of being read here. So, Solomonster, I've been listening since around episode 120, and I must say you have by far the best pro entertainments, he means pro wrestling, podcast around, hands down. I recently tried to listen to a few other podcasts and radio shows that are considered more legitimist, and they don't hold a candle to you. I hope you are able to one day make a living off this Sunday, as am I. You mentioned GLAAD and the WWE working together after complaints about some of John Cena's promos last month. Like you, I found parts of the promos in question to be very juvenile, but I think the one thing that critics of this move by WWE and GLAAD are not seeing is the inherent danger in promos like this, especially coming from someone like Cena. Some see this move as WWE becoming too politically correct or putting their tail between their legs, and that may very well be the case, but that does not mean that it is not the right thing to do, let's be honest. On the air, WWE has always equated homosexuality as only being one thing, negative or inferior. WWE aims its programming at families and children, and they have their top face and, quote, Make-A-Wish Super Cena making homophobic comments like this. Imagine if it, in an issue of a Superman comic, Superman said something similar to Lex Luthor and the Joker. But the problem is that Cena, like Superman, is supposed to be a moral role model that everyone, especially kids, can look up to. Instead, he is making comments that reinforce the negative stereotype that gay only means negative or inferior to all the children who look up to him as a hero. Down the line, this reinforcement can lead to verbal and, in some cases, even physical violence towards gays and lesbians. I also wish a women's group had called out WWE when the crappy Piggy James angle was going on, which was a horrible message to give to young women regarding their weight. I'm not saying that WWE shouldn't use homophobic or ignorant rhetoric at all, but they should place them in the mouths of their heels, and in doing so, they can allow the faces to do what heroes should, stand up for those who can't always stand up for themselves. Very well said. I disagree with almost nothing that you said, with the exception of thinking it's okay for the heels to use that kind of language so the heroes can stand up to them. I don't think, you know, if you're going to come down on this one way or the other, then you have to do it all the way or not at all. You can't really half-ass this and say, well, the babyfaces shouldn't say this, but the heels should. Because if let's say, who's a heel on Raw? If the Miz had used a word like Michael Cole used on Twitter, I personally would not support that. There's certain words that don't have any place on TV at all. And so that's the only part of your letter I would disagree with. I don't think it would be appropriate for anybody to use any of that language. If you're going to eliminate it completely. If a heel can't get over by doing traditional heel wrestling stuff, and the only way for a heel to kind of get over on TV is to use a word like what Michael Cole said on Twitter, then that person isn't very good at their job. And I get what you're saying about you have to have the good guy stand up to the bad guy. There's a million other ways you could do it without using that language. So that's the only thing I would disagree with. But overall, very well said. Gianluca writes in with a correction from something I said last week on the show. Says, "Dear Solomonster, when you mentioned Superstars, the TV show, you talked about shows that feature jobbers like Velocity, Shotgun, and Afterburn. Well, let me tell you that Afterburn is not a jobber show per se, but rather a recap show, and is still running overseas. Afterburn recaps SmackDown, Bottom Line recaps Raw, WWE Experience recaps both shows, and there's a new show called This Week in WWE, which recaps everything but edited and montaged in a different way. All those shows air outside of the USA. There's also another show called Vintage Collection, hosted by Mean Gene Okerlund, featuring old stuff, old matches, and anything you could think of that's in their video library. Just a tiny correction. Love your work. Keep it up." So thank you for the correction about Afterburn. Severio from Orlando writes in, "Call me crazy, but over the years, Shawn Michaels appears to have become a little more and more cross-eyed. Am I imagining all of this? Did he have some kind of surgery?" I don't believe he had any surgery, but you're right. His eyes are a little screwy. I don't remember if it's his left eye or his right eye, but one of his eyes is definitely different than it used to be. And I think it might be hereditary. I don't remember if he talked about this once, but you're definitely not going crazy. People have been joking about this for a couple of years now. And it's just one of those things. I don't know if it will continue to get worse. I don't know if it's resulted in any sort of impaired vision or if it's just more of a visual thing. But Shawn's eyes, he's not completely cross-eyed. I don't think I'd be able to look at him without laughing if he was. But yeah, one of his eyes is definitely screwed up. This comes from Craig. "I was watching the Brawl for All final at WrestleMania 15 with Bart Gunn and Butterbean. That Butterbean knockout looked pretty brutal. Were all the fights in the Brawl for All tournament between the then wrestlers legit? Because it was a pretty cool tournament. Why was it never repeated in the years after, before the end of the Attitude Era?" It was very real, and that was the reason why it never got repeated and will probably never be repeated. Because guys got hurt badly. I don't remember the total tally. I think Bradshaw got hurt. Let's see. Dr. Death, who was the favorite going into the tournament, was certainly JR's favorite. He got knocked out by Bart Gunn, but he, I think, pulled a hamstring during the fight, which led to him being knocked out. There were a couple of other injuries, too, some less severe than others, but guys really got hurt in that tournament, and it was a lesson to WWE. It was not the smartest thing in the world for them to do. To look back on the Brawl for All now is kind of cool, I suppose, because it's a different concept. We have not seen anything like it since. But the injuries mounted, and WWE has gone through periods where their rosters get very thin very quickly because of injuries. And by bringing back something like the Brawl for All, which would totally go against every aspect of their PG direction, would be the absolute dumbest thing they could possibly do. I mean, if they're so concerned about injuries, to bring back Brawl for All, this would be like Dixie Carter firing Vince Russo and making AJ Styles the world champion. Never going to happen. All right, so let's take one more question here, because I feel like grim death. I can go on no longer. This comes from Ant. He's been a listener since episode 50. "Dear Solomonster, when WrestleMania comes around, it always makes me want to look back on past events. Recently watched WrestleMania 8, which I think is a great show that does not get the credit it deserves. Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper, Ric Flair versus Randy Savage, Shawn Michaels' solo Mania debut were all highlights for me. However, it made me think that this event probably had matches that were originally planned that did not pan out. As much as Randy Savage and Ric Flair had a great match, it should have been Hogan and Flair, which had been built up for months after Flair's debut. Randy Savage was feuding with Jake Roberts at the time, and it's strange that the payoff didn't come at the Hoosier Dome. I also think that Sid vs. Undertaker would have been an ideal choice at the time. Do you think that these matches were originally planned, or did the event show what was supposed to be? Let's see here. Plus, have there been any other Manias that you can remember where some of the matches on the event may not have initially been the plan, but changed due to unfortunate circumstances? P.S. My birthday is coming up on March 31st. Could you give me a shout-out or perhaps a rendition of Happy Birthday if you're feeling brave? Well, I am not feeling brave, so I'll simply say Happy Birthday and leave it at that. I will not be making my singing debut this particular week. Maybe if you would have asked me in a week where I wasn't stuffed up and sounding like Deputy Dog, perhaps I would have done it, but not going to happen. But WrestleMania 8 is actually one of my favorites as well. Pretty sure I've talked about this before. It's interesting the card that you outline, because if I were booking WrestleMania at the time in 92, the matches I would have promoted almost mirror the matches that you mentioned. Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair, which again, the only reason, well, I shouldn't say the only reason, I talked about this last week, one of the reasons it didn't happen was Hogan was looking to disappear. There was a lot of stuff going on at the time with steroid accusations and just a lot of shit was going on. And for Hogan to win the championship from Flair, which, make no mistake, that would have been the outcome had the two squared off, would have made no sense since Hogan was going to disappear anyway. And in fact, he disappeared for a year. But beyond that, a lot of the house show matches that the two of them had in the months leading up to 92 did not do very well at the box office. I mean, I think beyond the first one or two, the ticket sales just were not up to snuff with what they had been anticipating. And so they decided to make the switch. Now, if I were booking the card, Hogan versus Flair would have been the top match. Jake Roberts and Randy Savage, which is one of my all-time favorite, severely underrated feuds in wrestling history. The big payoff would have been at WrestleMania. I agree. To me, there never really was a payoff. I mean, they had a match on a Saturday night's main event in February, the month before WrestleMania. And Savage beat Jake clean in what was not a very good match. It was a very short match. There was really nothing to it. That was the match where Undertaker turned babyface after the match by Jake Roberts was going to smack Elizabeth and Randy Savage with a chair as they came through the curtain. And Undertaker, who had been aligned with Jake Roberts in the months leading up to this, grabbed the chair and saved them. And that led to the Undertaker-Jake Roberts match at WrestleMania. But I agree, Savage and Roberts should have had the payoff at WrestleMania. In either a steel cage match, perhaps, or a loser leaves town match. I mean, as it turned out, Jake left the company after WrestleMania. Now, I guess it wouldn't have made sense in that Jake did not know he was wrestling his last WWF match at that point. I believe he had gone to the company and requested to have some role in creative. And he was turned down, or they never got back to him with an answer. And I think it was only before the match that day that he realized that this was going to be it, that he was leaving the company. So there was no advance knowledge, I suppose, but had they had that advanced knowledge, you could have had a loser leaves town stipulation between the two of them, with Savage going over, getting his revenge, and Jake leading the company. And then you could have had Sid Justice, instead of turning him heel, facing The Undertaker, had he stayed heel. Or I suppose you could have had a babyface Undertaker against the heel Sid. But either way, those are the matches I would have set up as well. Those are the matches, based on what was going on at the time, that would have made the most sense. But even so, Savage Flair, Piper, Bret Hart, Hogan Sid was a complete abomination, but there were some pretty good matches on that show, and even Jake the Snake and The Undertaker, who didn't have a great match per se, there's something about that match that I really, really like. WrestleMania 8 does not get the credit that it deserves. I said last week that Mean Gene, during that Legends Roundtable, made a crack about WrestleMania 8 and saying, oh, it wasn't as good as it could have been, which is absolutely true, but it broke my heart a little bit to hear him say that about that particular show. As far as other WrestleManias, I'm sure there have been a ton of WrestleManias that have, you know, plans have changed. I mean, plans change for WrestleMania every year, up until probably the week of. But the most glaring example from the last couple of years that I could think of would probably be WrestleMania 23 from Ford Field in Detroit, which had a pretty damn good main event between John Cena and Shawn Michaels. But that match was not the original plan. In fact, the original plan was supposed to be Triple H in a rematch from WrestleMania the previous year against John Cena. Thank God that did not happen, because I'm positive that we got a much better match out of it than we would have had. And that was really, I think, if not the first official match between Shawn and Cena, it was certainly the first big-time pay-per-view match between the two of them. And they had a better match on Raw about a week or two later in the UK. That was the 55-minute match on TV, the match that sparked, ignited, Chris Jericho's interest in wrestling all over again and made him want to come back later that year. But yeah, it was supposed to be Triple H, but he tore his quad 2 months earlier at the New Year's Revolution pay-per-view, and he was out. So that's how it goes. Also, I mentioned this once on the show that at one point in the lead-up to WrestleMania 22, in 2006, there was talk that they would match up Shawn Michaels and Eddie Guerrero in what would have been, I'm sure, a fantastic match. And unfortunately, Eddie passed away in November of 2005, which meant that that was not going to happen, and thus they came up with the Shawn Michaels-Vince McMahon idea. Let's play one final clip here. Again, some old-school Sala Monster here from the radio. This is from January 2002. Give my thoughts, my first impressions on a certain future WWE and UFC champion. Rewind.
I read also on Lance Storm's commentary about his match with the amateur wrestlers that are having the Venom.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar, I think his name is.
Yeah, do you know anything about him?
Yeah, I mean, I went to a Raw about 2 months ago, mm-hmm. and they have these matches before the events go to
matches.
Air. And I saw him come out. This guy's a monster, first of all.
Really?
Yeah, he's a monster. And basically, he's, I don't know, what is he, 350 pounds, and he does like a 450 splash off the top or something like that.
Yeah.
If you have mailbag questions, you can send them in, as always, to thesolemonster@gmail.com. That's thesolemonster, all one word, @gmail.com. I still have a couple of questions that I have not gotten to from the last 2 weeks, and I still intend to do so. I've fallen a little bit behind, so I apologize for that. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. I promise you I won't make a remark quite as dumb as the one that Michael Cole did. Well, maybe I will, but Facebook at facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You can friend me on there. I posted a hilarious YouTube clip of the Ultimate Warrior mowing down a poor ringside worker during an MSG house show back in, I guess, what would have been 1990. It is hilarious. The guy's comb over almost flies off his head. His body goes one way. His hair goes the other. It's just fucking hilarious. So you can find a link to that and a bunch of other stuff on there. And, of course, you can subscribe to this very podcast via iTunes. Do it for free. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off and you get hooked up on there. It just makes life a lot easier because the show will download automatically without you having to visit SE Scoops, although I do implore you to visit SE Scoops. In fact, I implore you to visit SE Scoops this Sunday for WrestleMania. Webmaster Mike is going to be in attendance at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, so I'm sure he will be uploading and tweeting photos and whatnot from the show. But yours truly, the Solomonster, will be in charge of live WrestleMania coverage when the pay-per-view goes on the air at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I will be doing live coverage of the show throughout the evening, and the comments section will be open. So if you want to hear my thoughts interspersed with live WrestleMania results, almost as good as actually watching the show, I would implore you to visit SE Scoops for all of that this Sunday beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am undecided if there will be a sound off next weekend. There probably will be, but I'll think about it, because I feel like if I can't do the show next Saturday, and the show doesn't go up until like midday or later in the day on Sunday with WrestleMania, and obviously I will have other obligations, what's the point? So we'll see if I can get a show out next Saturday. If not, I might just skip a weekend and come back the week after. But we'll see. Either way, episode 153 is on tap. I hope you will all return for that. Keep spreading the good word of the sound off. I appreciate that very much. SC Scoops is the place to be next Sunday. WrestleMania coverage with yours truly, the Solid Monster. I'll see you there. Have a good week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solid Monster sounds off on SCScoops.com.